Before there was Michelle Yeoh, Awkwafina, or Lucy Liu, came Anna May Wong. A century ago, she was the original Asian star in Hollywood. Plus, she was a fashion icon and singer and stage actor. Here's the thing. Anna May Wong fought racist tropes in showbiz throughout her career and had to take what she could. She died in 1961 at the age of 56. A new biography of hers is out. It's called Daughter of the Dragon. Author Yunta Huang is an English professor at UC Santa Barbara. He has two previous books on the Chinese-American experience, on Charlie Chan, the fictional police detective in novels and films, and on the Chinese conjoined twins known as the original Siamese twins, brought to the U.S. in the 19th century. Yunta Huang, welcome to Here and Now.
Thank you for having me, Scott.
Let's talk about Anna May Wong's life. She was born in 1905 in L.A., just outside of Chinatown. Her father ran a laundry shop. And for Chinese in America, this was just one generation after race riots in L.A., where Chinese were beaten, lynched, and just a generation after the Chinese Exclusion Act of 1882. What was young Anna May Wong up against as far as American society?
Well, that was a very hostile environment for her to be growing up in. Fortunately, for some reason, Hollywood from the get-go was hooked on that kind of exoticism of Chinatown. So they come across town all the time to shoot the street scenes. And growing up in the vicinity of Chinatown, Anna May Wong actually had sort of kind of advantage having access to Hollywood.
Because as you read, Hollywood kind of came to her. Instead of her going to Hollywood, Anna May Wong is 14 when she makes her debut in the silent film The Red Lantern. And then she gets her first leading role in the 1922 silent film Toll of the Sea. Let's hear some of that music.
She was living at the time. Yellow face was really the predominant mode of performance. White actors put on heavy makeup to play Asian characters. So for Anna May Wong to be cast for the lead role in this 1922 film is actually quite extraordinary.
Can you tell us briefly about Anna May Wong's role in Toll of the Sea?
She was playing the very typical Madame Butterfly character. This is the self-sacrificing Asian woman falling in love with a white man, and eventually, you know, the story ends in tragedy. Madame Butterfly, of course, is one of the most potent kind of trope in Asian American artistic tradition. After that, she was not able to find another big part like that, and as a result, she was disappointed and left for Europe.
Yeah, and she thrives. She stars alongside Marlene Dietrich in Shanghai Express.
I don't know if I ought to be grateful to you or not.
It's of no consequence. I didn't do it for you. Death cancel his debt to me.
Tell us a little about her reception in Europe and how different it is.
Her reception in Europe was great. She became quite popular in Germany, later on in France, and especially in England. And so she turned herself from a daughter of a laundryman into a global star.
Yeah. When she eventually comes back to the U.S., now this is in the 1930s, she starred in some of her most memorable films, including Daughter of the Dragon, 1931. It's also the title of your book, where she portrays the evil daughter of Fu Manchu, who bewitches her enemies with her beauty.
Remember only that you love me, whoever I am.
No, I always hated the name of Fu Manchu.
Forget that hate. I'm a woman. What is your hatred against our love? Against our eternal day together?
Some have said this role was one of her most cartoonish roles as a stereotypical Asian woman. Do you think Anna May Wong thought about, am I contributing to this stereotypical Asian woman, the whole dragon lady image?
Yes, Daughter of the Dragon cemented her legacy as the dragon lady, unfortunately. But, you know, these are roles imposed upon her. And she wasn't even able to get a big part in the first place. And so for her to play the lead role in this film, a Dr. Fu Manchu film, she was really doing this very delicate dance between convention and a subversion. And you can look at other ethnic actors, especially Black African-American actors in those years, and the same thing happened. So this is not as much as about Anime Wong doing this performance as about what the entire, you know, Hollywood culture or the culture of the nation was about.
Which brings us to Anime Wong's biggest disappointment in Hollywood, and that is not being cast in what I think the industry knew was going to be a blockbuster, The Good Earth, in 1937, based on a book about life in rural China. But of course, the lead male is cast as a white male. Is that the main reason Anime Wong did not get the role?
All her life, Anime Wong really wanted that part. Unfortunately, she was living at a time when Chinese were regarded as too Chinese to play such a role. And that really speaks to the depth of her tragedy. But of course, it was also an insult to the Asian community at the time, because the studio ended up casting predominantly, you know, Caucasian actors and having Asian actors as extras, you know, hovering in the background. Anime Wong's story represents really that, the entire Asian American experience.
Yeah. Now, toward the end of her life, you write that Anime Wong suffered ageism in Hollywood, which, you know, we know has been around as perhaps as long as film when it comes to women. And then she turns to the bottle, alcohol, and she died of a heart attack, may have been connected to that. How do you think about her greatest legacy? Was it her films or perhaps something else?
Anime Wong really represents the Asian American experience better than almost anybody else. Born in a laundromat, you know, rising from humble background. And then despite her beauty, talent, and tenacity, she had her career kind of hampered and thwarted by racism in Hollywood and in the country at the time. I guess that really defines her legacy.
Yeah. And finally, Professor, if I can just ask you briefly about your own journey to writing this book. You're the same age as I am. We were both in college during the 1989 student protests in China. You were at Peking University, but you got word that your mother was very ill and you raced home. And it turns out she tricked you. She was okay. She wanted you to come home. And in the end, you avoided the brutal crackdown a few days later, June 4th, in Beijing, in and around Tiananmen Square. So then you decide, you know, to pursue my career, I need to end up in the United States. And I just wonder, coming from that background, what made you so fascinated with ethnic Chinese and American culture?
Coming to America at the time, I had no clue that I was a colored person, you know. Only arriving in Tuscaloosa, Alabama, did I realize, you know, actually I was Asian. Because growing up in China as one of the billion, you wouldn't know that. So I'm really trying to examine these controversial cultural icons in order to tell the Asian American story. And in the process, really trying to help myself understand America better. Because to me, American culture is quite, you know, paradoxical in some ways.
Paradoxical how?
Well, just to give you one example, you know, racial mimicry really lies at the foundation of this nation. You know, the Boston Tea Party was really about a bunch of Bostonians dressed up in Mohawk Indian and grunting stage Mohawk words and throwing chests of tea into the harbor. So the very founding of this nation, you know, is predicated on racial mimicry. And as a result, yellow face, black face, red face, this kind of racial ventriloquism lies at the heart of American artistic tradition. But of course, it's deeply racist. And I'm not trying to say without racism, there will not have been American culture. But the paradox lies deeply inside the American cultural tradition. And that's really what I'm trying to, you know, wrestle with.
We've been talking to Yunta Huang. His book is Daughter of the Dragon, Anime Wong's Rendezvous with American History. Professor Huang, thanks for sharing the time. Much appreciated.
Thank you.